Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Welcome. I've been looking forward to this one. I was excited, but yeah, that's right. I am always looking forward to it. You know me already. No, but I was really looking forward to this one. In the last few days, in fact, as we speak, there is a festival in India called Navaratri, which means nine nights. Navaratri. Nine nights of what? Nine nights of the Devi, of the goddess. In celebration primarily of three expressions or manifestations or expansions of the goddess energy. And they are Durga Devi, and Saraswati Devi, and Lakshmi Devi. So I'm going to add the icing to that cake, include Srimati Radharani. That's the highest manifestation of the goddess energy. In this world? Oh no, far beyond. So we're going to talk about those four goddesses primarily. They do not observe a festival for Radha in this particular Navaratri. But we are going to give her due and her recognition now, today. So at the end of the 9 days of Navaratri, then they have the Dusra. Is it called, am I saying it correctly? Dusra?
Dasara.
Yeah. 10th day. And the 10th day, they celebrate Lord Ram's victory over the demon king Ravana. And they think they burn Ravana in a big effigy, don't they? Set him up in fire, and it's quite a scene. So that's what they do on the 10th day.
Vijayadashami.
Vijayadashami?
Vijayadashami.
Okay. 10th day of the victory.
Yeah.
Of Vijay.
Vijayadashami.
So each goddess is worshipped for about 3 days in turn, starting with Durga, who destroys negative tendencies. This I just got off the internet. Next is Lakshmi, who bestows good virtues and fortune, and last Saraswati, who instills wisdom and spiritual knowledge. The worship accompanied by fasting takes place in the mornings, and the evenings are for feasting and dancing. Very nice. So, in honor of Navaratri, I was compelled to talk about the goddess in simple and expansive concepts, hopefully, today. So first let's look at the goddess, or the concept of the goddess. Goddess is what? Divine feminine. The divine feminine. In Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. In the Old Testament, the Hebrew name for the goddess is the abomination. The abomination. Not really expressed, not popular, not promoted by any means in the Old Testament. It seems to be to some degree prejudiced against the recognition of the goddess, the divine feminine. The New Testament shows Jesus accepting Mary Magdalene, a common prostitute, as his disciple, which shows his compassion and his mercy. But the only expression of the goddess in Christianity that I know of is Mary, Mother of Jesus. That's the closest thing we have. It's very much expressed and adhered to in the Catholic faith. When they chant the rosary, the prayer most oft chanted is Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. So the goddess, the divine feminine, is recognized in Catholicism. I think in some of the other Protestant traditions, not so. They don't really recognize. Okay. In the 12th and 13th century in France, all the French cathedrals were called what? All of them. Notre Dame, Our Lady. It's big. Big recognition. You've been to France? If not, you've seen the photographs of the cathedrals in France? Wow. What an expression of devotion to the goddess. Wonderful. In Islam, no particular image of the goddess is recognized, to my knowledge. During Navaratri, this is an interesting point I thought I'd throw in for your edification. During Navaratri, they fast all day, and then at night there's dancing and feasting, which I mentioned. What other festival can you think of where they fast all day and then feast at nighttime? Which one?
Ramadan.
Of course. That's what they do, don't they? They tell me, a couple of Muslim people told me, yeah, they kind of overeat a little bit at night because they haven't eaten all day, they're hungry. I said, oh, yeah, okay, I understand. But Ramadan is actually, because like everything else, almost all words come from Sanskrit. So Rama and Dana are Sanskrit words. So Dana means the gift, or the gifts. And Rama is God. Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. So the gifts of God, Ramadan, the gift of God. However, if you are celebrating the goddess, is her name Rama? It's the same word, but it's said differently. How do you say it?
Rama.
Rama is the goddess, the female manifestation. But it's not Ramadan, it's Ramadan. It's male. Interesting, huh? So, yes, it means the gifts or the blessings of the goddess or God, depending how you pronounce it. Okay. There's four levels, typically, at which one worships God. I'm sure we will fall into one of these categories, perhaps two. The materialist, which we call in Sanskrit, what do we call materialist in Sanskrit? Karmi. Karmi. One who does karma, action, that creates more karma, that creates reaction. Reaction, reaction. Karmi. Which is equivalent to materialist, because he's trying to do things to expand his life, his success in the world. So, why does he worship God? He worships God for fulfillment of his material desires and for the protection against his fears. Isn't this a very common theme among people? They're afraid of many things in this world, understandably so. Excuse me, and they worship God for protection. Protection against fears and against bad karma. Oh, Lord, don't bring this upon me, please. You know. So, that's the karmi. Then the yogi practices yoga, pranayama, asana, yoga postures. He primarily worships for what? What's his goal? What does he want?
Liberation.
Powers.
Powers. Siddhis. Mystical siddhis. Powers. Does he get those? Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Eight. There are eight siddhis. I haven't met a few people with some of the siddhis. I haven't met that many in my lifetime. The jnani worships God too. The jnani is the philosopher. The guy who's always trying to figure out how it all works and why it works and, you know, reads everything and sometimes gets a little bit stuck in the head, in the brain. That's a jnani. So what is a jnani looking for? What is his goal?
Liberation.
Liberation from what? Samsara.
repeated birth and death.
He wants to get off the wheel of samsara and get moksha, liberation. And then the bhakta or the devotee worships God because he wants what?
Love.
He wants a loving, devotional reciprocation with God. Well, what about liberation? Well, that's considered to be a bonus. It's a side thing. It's not the main thing. The main thing is love, a loving relationship. And if God chooses to bless him with moksha, cool, great. But that's not the point. The point is the loving dynamic. So we fit into one of these categories, maybe two, maybe three, I don't know. So we're going to talk about the Devi. Sanskrit word for the goddess is Devi, spelled D-E-V-I, right? What's the Sanskrit word for the god? Deva, masculine, Devi, feminine, right? What is the Sanskrit root word for those words? Div. D-I-V. What does it mean? To shine. That's what it means. To shine. Because the more godlike you become, the more you begin to shine, don't you? You ever see the pictures painted with the halos? Yeah. Those are real. That's how it works. Your aura gets whiter and cleaner and brighter. If you ever had your aura photographed and you see all these different colors in the aura photograph, the higher you get, the more white, pure white it becomes. So, to shine. Like a celestial, like a godly being. So from div we get devi, deva, and in English we get divine. Divinity, the verb to divine, to determine an outcome of something, divination, right? So today we're going to talk about four devis, as mentioned. Two of them are connected to the material world. That's where we live, in case you're wondering, material manifestation. Down here, terra firma. And two that are connected pretty much solely to the spiritual world. Durga is connected solely to the material world. Saraswati is connected pretty much solely to the material world. Lakshmi is connected solely to the spiritual world, but she also plays a role down here in the material world, but as a spiritual goddess. Whereas Radha has nothing whatsoever to do with the material world at all. She's spiritual start to finish. So, being that she's the highest manifestation of the goddess, it would be a shame to omit her among these others. So, Durga, or Maya Devi. Let's start with Durga. Om Shri Durgayai Mahamayayai Swaha. Om Shri Durgayai Mahamayayai Swaha. So, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says the abode of the external energy is called Devi Dham. Devi meaning Durga Devi. Dham is abode, your place, where we are. So it's the place of Durga. This place right here. And its inhabitants are the conditioned souls. It is there that the material energy, Durga, Devi, personified. She is the personification of the material energy. She resides with various helpers and maidservants and people to do her bidding. This is where we are. Durga is responsible for Maya. Maya is what? Illusion. What's the greatest illusion? Very simple. What's our number one illusion for all of us?
Material. I'm the body.
I'm the body. This is it. This is the be all, the end all. This is me. I'm a man. I got white skin. I was born in Canada. Yeah, and I sit here in Ireland, and that's, you know, this is the whole ball of wax. This is it. And then somehow or other, I don't know why, I dropped dead. Not part of my plan. Very disappointing if your whole identity is caught up in this. Highly disappointing at some stage. Especially to those who love you when you disappear. Is this the be-all and the end-all? No, it isn't. Because the soul, which inhabits the body, gives the body consciousness, is eternal. The soul will be around. You're never going to die. So forget this death business. All death is changing clothes. Okay, my outfit wore out. Got a little mud on it. Oh no, here's a hole in my pant leg. Got to change that. Oh, you got terminal cancer? Yeah, okay, you better change the body. That's all there is to it. I don't mean to make fun of people with a terminal illness, but bottom line, that's all there is to it. And we get another body. If you want another one, you get as many as you like. Okay. This is a material conception of life. That the identity is all cut up here. But it's material, so therefore it is temporary. Are we temporary? No, we're eternal. Like God. Made in the image and likeness of God. We don't die. So, I know you miss people when they die, when they go. That's okay. They're still around somewhere. Don't forget that. Okay. So Durga is Maya Devi. Maya means illusion. Maya, not this. Whatever you think it is, it ain't this. It's not this. And Durga has two potencies or two actions. We should call them perpetrations that she perpetrates on us all. What are they? On the soul. On the soul. Each and every one of us. Pratyekatmaka and avaranatmaka. Those are the two things she does. Sounds scary. It is scary. Prakshepa means she throws you down into the material whirlpool, material world. She throws the soul out of the Garden of Eden. You ever heard Garden of Eden? Adam and Eve? We're out of here. Close the door, don't come back. That's every one of us. We've been thrown into the material whirlpool. And if we had full memory of what it's like to be in the spiritual world, to be in the transcendental realm, can you imagine how you'd be suffering right now? Can you imagine? Oh my God, what did I do here? You'd be banging on the door. Let me in. There's been a mistake. Hello? Can you get the supervisor? He's not here. He's his day off. Right? But you can't remember that. And we say, yeah, I can't remember my past lives. I can't remember. That is a blessing, friends. That is a blessing. Or you'd be walking around real miserable, particularly when you were the Queen of Sheba many years ago. And you're not anymore. I had a lot of my clients tell me, you know, I was Cleopatra. And I go, Good. And now? Now it's different. Maybe you were. I don't know. It might have been. Queen Victoria. Yeah. Okay, so the second potency is avarana, covering over. The memory's gone. Remember when you're a little child? You think it's your first life, it's your first go around. Do you remember? Well, some of you have remembered, I know you have remembered past lives, but most of us are just like, how did I get here? what the heck happened? You know, I came from your what? Inside your stomach? No, don't tell me that one. That doesn't sound good. One day my mother took me aside. She sat me down. She says, "Son, I have something to tell you." I said, "Yeah." I'm 5 years old, sitting there in my pajamas, just woke up in the morning. "I'm not your mother." "Oh. There's another lady that's your mother." "Oh. But I love you." "Dad and I love you." "Okay. Good. Well, there's a bit of an adjustment there. Took a day or two to set that one in motion." So, it's another form of illusion. I thought she was my mother. She's not. Somebody else. It's the illusion within the illusion within the illusion within the illusion. Have you experienced that before? Yeah. That's what it's like here. So, how long do you want to stay in the illusion? One lifetime? 1,000? Several thousand? A few 100,000? Up to you. As long as you keep identifying with the illusion and thinking this is just so wonderful here, you'll be back. "Can I get a ticket for next year's event?" "No problem." "Where would you like to sit?" "Up front, in the back." "No problem." So Durga, in a sense, has a thankless task because she's keeping us all throwing and covering potencies, keeping us all in illusion. But that's what we wanted. I won't get into all this. I've done this on other talks. That's the envy, the original envy. Original sin is envy. Envy is a god. Well, you can't live here. Go down there. You can live down there. And you can become the center of the universe. Sort of. So that's why we're here. So, Durga is considered to be the wife of Shiva. And Shiva is one of the guna avatars, or three manifestations of avatar, or avatar means god who descends either personally or selects a delegate, or delegates a person, or more properly empowers a person to come down here and take care of a specific task. And empowers that person. How do we know when a person is empowered to do a certain task by God? When they shift the consciousness of hundreds or thousands or millions of people. That's how we know. This word avatar gets bandied about a lot these days, mostly in gaming. An avatar is a very, very spiritual, very high spiritual concept. You don't have to be God to be a kind of avatar. I can't remember the name of it now. What's the kind of avatar where this is, the Jiva is empowered? What's the name?
Shaktivesh.
Shaktivesh avatar. That's it. Prabhupada, our guru, is a Shaktivesh avatar. Did he say he was? No. Never. How do we know? Because he shifted the consciousness ultimately of millions of people. That's how. He came to America. A month from now, I'm going to talk again here. And I'm going to tell you all about Prabhupada. I'm going to tell you his story. Because it's right around the time of his disappearance. In fact, it's the day before. So, when you see somebody come to New York on a cargo ship with $7 in his pocket, and he goes to live in New York City on the Bowery, which is Skid Row, where everybody's lying around drunk and, you know, whacked out on drugs, and he lives in a place like this for an entire year while he's trying to get things off the ground, get things together. And then within a year and a half or so, everything transforms, and next thing you know, You got a worldwide explosion of consciousness by means of, inspired by his teachings. Who can do that? Not many people. That's really what an avatar does. Prabhupada's a jiva, he's not God. He's a jiva, he's a spirit soul, like you or me. But he was empowered. So Shiva is in charge of the mode of destruction, or tamoguna. Shiva is a very high being. He's considered to be 75% of the energy of God. And Shiva, normally we see Shiva portrayed when he's married, he's with Parvati in a loving, marital, dedicated, devoted marriage to his wife Parvati, who is also another manifestation of the goddess. And Durga is yet another manifestation of the goddess from Parvati, but each has a specific task of keeping us down here and in illusion. The name Durga means fort. And she's hard to know, she's hard to understand because she's distant, she doesn't participate, and she's very much a loner. So what is this concept of fort? You're in it. We can call it a fort or we can call it a prison. You're in it. Your own prison. And you're all sentenced to? To what? You're all on death row. I'm not on death row. Oh, yes, you are. Dead man walking. We're all on death row. We're all going to die. That's death row. Here in the prison. I never thought about it like that before. Well, maybe you should start. That's what it comes down to. Until we're ready to go and say, no, enough, no, no more. I'm getting out. You want to drill a hole in the wall with me? We'll escape? Well, yeah, let's escape, but we don't. You can't drill a hole in the wall. There aren't any walls. It's pretty good, huh? Yet they still keep you here. Pardon?
Some people go suicide to get through.
They go through which?
Suicide.
Some people go through suicide to get through the hole in the wall. Exactly true, my dear. So, yeah, see what tragedy it provokes? Yeah. Okay, so we pray to Durga. People pray to Durga because she gives you all material facility. Oh, I need this and I need that. I need a husband, I need a wife, I need a house, I need a job, I need a new car. You know, you pray to Durga. Durga, like Shiva, her husband, is called Ashutosh. Easily pleased, easily angered. Easily pleased, easily angered. So you can win Durga's grace and gifts fairly easily by praying to Durga for material blessings primarily. The conditioned souls down here in the material world are caught up in the allurement and the illusion, and therefore they do not wish to leave the external energy. Consequently, this is the external energy. What does that mean? The external energy of God. Right? That's what it means. Consequently, they keep making plans to live here peacefully and happily. Right? Okay, then we're going to get this, and then we're going to buy one of those, and then we're going to upgrade our car, and then we're going to get a bigger house. And isn't that what we do here? Is there something wrong with it? There's nothing wrong with that in and of itself, as long as you know that you're a soul and you're not meant to be here. It's as absurd as this. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives this wonderful example of the absurdity of living here in the material world by saying that what? You stop at a hotel for the night because you're on a journey from A to B and you're stopping off at a hotel, and you decide to do what? Well, honey, why don't we get the whole place redecorated? I don't like this furniture. Let's get rid of this. Let's get new carpets. These paintings, they gotta go. All right? That's a great example. If That's what we do here in the material world. You know you're going to die. I'm not saying you shouldn't have a nice house and a nice life while you're here. But you keep forgetting. It's temporary. But you're eternal. Right? There's a real conundrum there. In that. A real contradiction. Isn't there? Okay. I got so many notes, there's no way in the world to get through these today. Okay. Durga is the material energy to keep people under the control of material energy, as mentioned. Krishna has three potencies. Krishna, or God, no matter how you think about God, has three potencies. Sorry. My knee's bothering me. Sorry. They are the internal potency, the external potency, and the marginal potency. What does that mean? Internal is spiritual energy, pure spiritual energy, divine energy, transcendental energy, God energy, and largely Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, takes care of that, or in her manifestation known as Yoga, Yoga Maya. Mahamaya, the material energy, is Durga, external energy. This is all material energy, that which has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Right? What's the marginal energy? Ooh. That's all us. Sitting here. Really? How come we're marginal? Because we're not fully material and we're not fully spiritual. We're on the margin. Go down to the ocean. Right? On the beach. Right where the ocean comes in, the waves hit the shore, and you got the sand. There's the sand, there's the water coming in. Which is sand, which is water? Right? It's on the margin. That's us. Because these bodies are material energy. They're the external energy. How do you know that? How can you prove that to me? Because I know you're going to die. I'm sorry. I do. And I know you don't want to. Anything that has a beginning, middle, and an end is external energy. Internal energy never dies. It's spiritual energy. It's the internal potency of God. It's eternal. It has three qualities. Sat, Chit, Ananda. Sat means eternal. Chit means full consciousness. Full consciousness. Does that mean, oh, now I'm a physicist? No. Not exactly. It means, now you know how everything works and how everything fits together and the grand scheme of things and where you fit in. That's what it means. That's chit. Ananda means bliss. What are we all chasing around after in our lifetime? Tell me. Happiness. No. Ananda, bliss. But our happiness comes and goes and comes and goes, waxes and wanes. Right? That's not ananda. Ananda, it never goes. And if you're truly situated in the internal potency, your happiness and your joy and your bliss does what? Does it go up and down? Does it go down? No, it expands. Ever expanding. Now, we honestly don't know anything that's ever expanding being down here. I can't give you an example. That's what ananda is. That's the internal potency. So we're trying to extract ourselves as souls from the external potency, material energy, and establish ourselves once again completely in the internal energy under the divine protection of God, into the loving hands of God. Nice. That's what we're trying to do. Okay. Now, Durga is very beautiful. Very beautiful goddess. But she's a warrior goddess. Of course, gentlemen, you met women like this, have you not? One or two. It's funny, huh? Men love strong women, you know. And then they get singed a couple of times with the fire and they go, oh, I don't know, no. All right? She's a warrior goddess, but she's gorgeous. And she always portrays herself in the ultimate feminine portrayal. She's not butch, she's not buff, she doesn't work out, none of that stuff. Not saying working out is bad, but sometimes when you're a woman but you don't look so much like a woman, that might be an example. But she's absolutely beautiful, okay? But she's a warrior. So there's a good story about Durga before I get on to the next one. The two demon brothers, Shumba and Nishumba, and they had routed the demigods and they had taken control over large portions of the universe, and or I don't know how many universes, but they were big guns. They were nasty guys, and they heard one of their minions told them that there's this absolutely wonderful goddess. And by the way, did you see her? Yeah, she's up in the mountain. She's riding on a tiger. A what? A tiger? She rides a tiger? Ooh, I like her. Tiger actually represents the lower nature and represents her taming the lower nature. Exactly. But those guys said, ooh, I'm going to... No, she's the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. Let's go. We're going to marry her. Both of them. Shumba and Nishum. Durga says, gentlemen, can I help you? Yes, little lady. My brother and I very much are taken by your beauty. In fact, we're stricken. And we want to marry you. Oh, well, that's very, very nice proposal. I made a vow to myself a long time ago that I'd only marry a man who could defeat me in combat. What? I'd only marry a man who could defeat me in combat. Otherwise, you know, I'd be in the male role. I mean, I don't want to be in the male role. I want to be in the female role in the relationship. Well, there was chaos and carnage, and the only one left standing was Durga on the tiger. And all the rest of the demons and their forces and everybody else is vanquished. So let's just say there wasn't a marriage that took place at that time. So that's one of the good stories about Durga Devi. Okay, let's move on to Saraswati Devi. Oh, you know what? I was going to pass these around. I printed some out. Can you pass a couple this way, please? Just pass them around so everybody gets to look at them. And okay, Saraswati is Yakundendu Tushara Radavalaya Shumbravastra Vrita Yavina Varadanda Mandita Karaya Shweta Padmasana Ya Brahma Chitta Shankara Prakriti Birdeva Sada Vandita Samampatu Saraswati Bhagavati Nishesh Janyapa. Saraswati is the goddess of learning and the patron of the arts, the muse. There's a very beautiful picture of her on that page. Brahma, the creator, went into meditation. And he was in the pure mode at that time of sattva. He suffused his mind with sattva, pure goodness. What is the pure mode of goodness? What happens when you've brought the mind up into the pure mode of goodness? You can only think things or do things or say things that will benefit absolutely everybody. Entire world, including you. If you're trying to do something on behalf of the world and you're criticizing yourself like crazy over it, are you in the pure mode of goodness? No, you're not. If you're including yourself in the benefit, then we're in pure mode of goodness. So while he's meditating like this, Saraswati appeared. Because Brahma is the creator, he creates all the diversity of life in the universe. And she said to him, "My lord, who am I? Give me a name. What is my job?" And he said, "Well, beautiful one, you're very inspiring. Looking at you, I'm very inspired for creation. So you're the muse. You know the muse? Muse, every artist needs a muse, no? And inspiration. You know, in Greek mythology, the nine muses, the daughters of Zeus and what's her name? Nemene or something like that? Memory. So, the muse, the inspiratrix, you could call her. So, she's arts, sciences, speech in particular, Saraswati. Anything you want to do creatively, you want to study, you want to speak, you want to become a learned person, a pundit, a wise person, you want to come up with a scientific discovery to benefit the world, for example, Saraswati, that's who you pray to. Many, many people have been devoted to Saraswati with very, very good result. Are we promoting Saraswati? I'm not promoting Saraswati for you to become her devotee. I'm just telling you how she's seen in the context of things. You'll do what you want to do. We promote Radha here for reasons I'll give later. So Saraswati, her name is composed of Saras and Vati or Vati, they say in Sanskrit. Saras means what? Essence, or juice, or rasa, or water. Saras. And Vat is one who possesses it. Vati is a female who possesses such essence. So Saraswati actually appeared. Brahma was very impressed with her, and he said, "Okay, I'm going to have you manifest yourself in the world, in the universe, under three different forms, because you're something else." Why was she something else? Because he conjured her up in the mode of pure sattva, pure goodness. That's why. Did he do that with all the rest of the creation? I think not. No, he didn't. But he did in her case. So, he said, he proclaimed that her name would be Saraswati, that her primary position would be to sit upon the tip of everyone's tongue. Oh, that is way cool. Sit on the tip of everyone's tongue. That's what she does. To enable you to speak. But it says that upon the tongues of learned and creative people, she would actually be found doing what? Dancing. Not sitting. Dancing. That's what she'd be doing. You know when people sing sometimes, when they speak, whatever it is they do, lecture at university, I don't know. And you go, "Oh my God." Right? You can bet Saraswati is dancing on the tip of that person's tongue. Have you ever said something and it came out of your mouth and you went, "Oh my God, where did that come from?" I dare say Saraswati was dancing on your tongue. Because when you get the blessings of Saraswati, you can become an extremely famous, wise, successful artist, dancer, poet. What word do we get from muse in English? Music. Musician, dancer, right? Saraswati is wonderful. Prabhupada's guru, our guru's guru, was Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. Because he took sannyas initiation. Sannyas means highest level of renunciation, of material renunciation, from the Saraswati Mata, the Saraswati division of sannyas, one of their gauranas or whatever they call them. But he has that name. But Bhaktisiddhanta was a scholar in several languages, in astrology, astronomy, I can't even remember what all. I mean, if you listen to him speak English, well, you don't. There's no recordings of him, but if you read what he's written in English, most of us wouldn't be able to understand it, even though we speak English. It's very, very erudite level of scholarship. Most people don't have it. Okay. So Saraswati has four arms. The goddess often manifests in more than two arms. You and I, we could use an extra two a lot of the time. But we don't have it, do we? I sometimes meditate on having another two, but they haven't appeared yet that I've noticed. So the goddess has four. Durga has ten, and they're all filled with weapons. I didn't even tell you about that. I didn't want to. Maybe it might be too much. Saraswati has four only, like Lakshmi. And here, she has a book, upper left. Lower right, she has a japa mala, chanting beads, rosary. Right? Why? This is for learning. The book is for learning and scholarship and study. Everything we've talked about, arts, letters. But that's the left hand. The right hand, being a predominant factor, is the japa mala. Because spiritual practice, spiritual culture, spiritual growth takes precedence over material culture. That is the concept. Right? No, maybe either. And then she has here a veena. Veena, like a sitar, like a guitar, if those of you don't know any Indian instruments. And that's what she's playing with the other two hands, because she's patron of the arts. It's actually a veena, and they do play the Saraswati veena. Still, there are some people in India, more often than not, they are women. And wonderful, whoa, what a sound. Transcendental. So it says it's to show that her learning and knowledge is not simply dry intellectual or empirical understanding, but that it is tempered with heart sentiment and emotional sensitivity of the poet and the artist. Beautiful, huh? What do we get when we go to school in the Western world? Well, in India too, for that matter. Nowadays, in education, what kind of education do we get? It is almost solely and completely
materialistic.
A materialistic, left-brain, intellectual, analytical education, is it not?
They don't even teach religion in school.
No. Well, you might make somebody angry if you teach religion nowadays. But that's what the focus is on. Unless you're actually taking arts classes or music classes or drama classes, then you're going to get the right brain expression. And you're going to be encouraged to be creative in your thinking, no? But you see how far it's come? It's gone way, way over in this side. There used to be a balance where a lot of people, I'm going to study history. If you tell somebody today you're going to study history, they'll just laugh and say, well, there's no money in that, man. There's no money. What are you doing? You're going to study history? Are you crazy? You know, I'm going to become a singer. Yeah. Okay, good. What are you going to do, clubs? It used to, all these things were encouraged because it was an expression of your nature, wasn't it? Nowadays, MBA. I'm going to become an accountant. Banker. Ooh. Look out for him later. You know. Is there something wrong with studying those subjects? No. But it's way over on that side. We're out of balance. We're out of whack. Saraswati? Perfect balance, huh? If you develop your spirituality, does not your right brain, your creative, your artistic, your imaginative, your abstract, your intuitive side develop also? Unless you're a jnani, it does. In bhakti yoga, it does. Believe me, this is all about the heart. It's all about the heart. That's why we're all sitting here. You'd say, no, I came for the prasadam. Okay, fine. That's okay. But it's really about the heart. That's what we're doing here. Okay. Here's a good story. Saraswati. Once a powerful demon... Oh, here's another demon. Caused disruption. European Central Bank, here they come. Who said that? His name was Kumbhakarna. Having performed severe penances, decided to ask Brahma for a boon. You go to Brahma in meditation and in prayer, and you'd ask him, I need a boon, I need a blessing. Hey, throw me a bone here. Help me out. What did he ask for? Well, he wanted to be able to defeat all the gods, all the celestials in the heavenly realms. Kill them all. Defeat them all. And the demons will take over the universe once again. Alright? The bull is in the china shop. So, he said, yeah, just, you know, meditate, and we'll see how it goes. Do your tapas, and we'll see how it goes. So the Brahma said, Saraswati, come here. Go on the tip of Kumbhakarna's tongue, please. You know what to do, don't you? Okay. So, the word that Kumbhakarna was meditating on was Nirdeva. Nirdeva. No gods. Nir means no. Destroy. Get rid of. Crush the gods. Deva. Nirdeva. Nirdeva tva. Tva means the state of being. The state of having no gods. So Saraswati was there on his tongue, and she caused him to mispronounce the word. That's why pronouncing words correctly, especially Sanskrit mantras, is kind of important. Okay. If you tell somebody your name, because the sweetest sound in the world to any single person is the sound of their own name. And you tell them their name, and they can't quite get it, and they keep mispronouncing it, and you keep correcting them and telling them over and over again. After a while, you get really frustrated because they're calling you some other name. It happens. So she changed. She caused him to mispronounce Nirdeva, as in wiping out the gods, to Nidrava. Nirdeva to Nidrava. Nidrava. What is Nidrava?
Sleep.
Nidravatva. 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 There he goes, Kumbhakarna. Off and running. So I don't know how many years he did that for. That's what they would do. They would do like for years. Do the mantra. Not like us, 5 minutes. Okay, that's good. I did. So what happened? So Brahma came down and says, I will award you with the boon you've asked for, Nidravatva, and you will sleep solidly for 6 months out of every year. You're welcome. That's what he got. Did they wipe out the gods? Oh, no. He's asleep. Where's that Kumbhakarna? We need him here for this. He's sleeping. And remember, when he wakes up, you better have a lot of food here, because he gets really hungry, like a bear. True. That's true. He was huge, Kumbhakarna. Huge, big, big demon, like a giant. So I guess he got his comeuppance. How late do I go? Do you know? 5 o'clock? 4:45?
It's a special occasion.
Special occasion.
He'd go till 7 if he
No, I wouldn't. Surely I would run out of things to say. Never. So, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the deity in the center of the altar there, wearing saffron, he's an incarnation of Krishna. He appeared in Bengal 500 years ago, and he propagated the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and said, look, why not just sing, dance, and eat your way back to Godhead? And everybody said, ooh, well, there's an idea. Sing, dance, sing, chant, dance, and take prasadam, food that's been offered to Krishna, food that's been offered to God, which can actually remove negative karma, which they will serve you later. Why not just do that? Because this is Kali Yuga, the Iron Age, the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. It's real hard to maintain spiritual consciousness with all that's going on around us. That is a fair statement, ladies and gentlemen. So, when Chaitanya was 12, no one knew he was God. Never said he was, ever. But when he went to school, whatever lesson they taught him, he learned it completely once, having heard it once, and committed everything to memory. So, he was there maybe at age 12, 13, somewhere around there, and he was already a pundit, a full-blown Vedic pundit. He had studied all the scriptures, all the shastras, and his knowledge was voluminous. And he's had other friends there his age. Did they have his level of knowledge? No, they did not. They were his classmates, and actually some were his students. And came a very, very famous Kashmiri pundit, Keshava Kashmiri, who was known throughout India as being a real heavy-duty pundit. I mean, this guy was brilliant. You could not defeat him. It was very popular in those days to go around and show off your knowledge and argue about different things and compose Sanskrit poetry at the drop of a hat. And you see who was more brilliant or who could defeat whom in polemics, in argument. So this guy, when they heard he was coming to Navadvip, all the pundits of Navadvip, the grown men were quaking in their boots. Oh my God, oh my God. You know, because they're going to have to sit and face him at some point in time, and he's going to destroy them, you know, verbally. And then they give him a stamp or something, and he arrives with his entourage, his retinue. This guy's a famous guy. So it just so happened, coincidentally, how things happen when it's connected to God? No. Nothing happens coincidentally, even down here. Everything happens because it's meant to. There are no accidents. There is only synchronicity and serendipity, my friends. What does what mean? Those two words, synchronicity and serendipity, it means there is a higher connection that makes things happen that we cannot see or determine. And synchronicity means two things come together at exactly the right time. That's what it means. Okay? So Chaitanya and all his friends happen to be strolling the bank of the Ganga, as you do, taking bath in the Ganga, as you do when you go to Bengal. And Keshava Kashmiri showed up on the shore of the Ganga. And Chaitanya approached him and says, "Oh, you're the great pundit, Keshava Kashmiri. Please accept my obeisances, my pranams. And would you do us the honor, sir, of Chaitanya speaking, composing a verse about Mother Ganga, a Sanskrit verse?" "Well, yes, child, I would do you that honor." So he composed 100 verses simultaneously, spontaneously, off the top of his head, praising Mother Ganges. 100. Whoa, this guy is heavy duty. And then he finished, and he was beaming, because he was a devotee of who? Tell me.
Saraswati.
Saraswati. Was she sitting or dancing on his tongue? Oh, she's dancing. She's doing probably different steps, different methods, different kinds of dance, I'd say, to inspire this guy. He's got the brain, he can deliver it. And Chaitanya said, "Oh, my Lord, that's wonderful. That was wonderful. But I have a question." "Yes, child, what is your question?" Immediately, Chaitanya had memorized all 100 verses, word for word, upon hearing them once. Of course, the pundit didn't know that. Uh-oh. I wonder who's dancing on his tongue. It's not Saraswati. It's more like Radha. So he said, "Yes, 64th verse," and he quoted it. You have, and he pointed out the grammatical flaws in the composition of the verse. And the pundit was like a deer in the headlights. How do you remember the 64th verse? Was that not the 64th? Yeah. Is that not what it said, word for word? Yes. Are those not flaws, technically speaking? Yes, they are. They are. There's a few more verses, a few more flaws, but that's okay, Panditji. We're all very impressed. Thank you so much. Well, he just got defeated by a 12-year-old boy on the bank of the Ganga. It's a good thing all the big famous pundits in Navadvipa weren't there. He'd be absolutely mortified. Well, the word spread like wildfire, naturally. So immediately he was dumbfounded. How did this happen? He went home where he was staying and he did his puja, his worship of Saraswati, his worshipable goddess. And she appeared to him that night in a dream. She told him, She said, "I have caused you to make these mistakes." "You have? Why?" "Because you just met the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that was his wish. He caused me to cause you to make the mistakes." "Oh. So what do you think you're going to do now, Panditji? What do you think you should do?" The problem with the pundit was one thing and one thing only. What was his problem?
Ego.
Ego. Pride. "Just see how smart I am. Watch me." Yeah? Chaitanya removed the ego. Without ego, you can't live in the material world, my friends. Can you? Uh-uh. He put him right into spirit. He plugged him right back in the wall. Into spirit. And the next morning, he went down to the Ganga and he threw himself on the beach at the feet of Chaitanya and surrendered to him. "My Lord, please accept me as your servant." That was Chaitanya's mercy on him. He says, "Yes, now go, keep doing what you're doing, go around the world and teach people. But just, we've eliminated the ego now. Can you imagine how wonderful it's going to be without that old ego banging around in here?" Yeah? So that's the story of Chaitanya and Keshava Kashmiri. Lakshmi. Oh. Because I got to get to Radha. That goes short on Lakshmi, Ankh. Lakshmi is the goddess of fortune, goddess of wealth and prosperity. And Lakshmi is the consort of Vishnu. Vishnu is God. Lakshmi has four arms, and normally in the four arms are the lotus, sometimes two lotuses. Sometimes this hand does this, which means don't worry. Everything will be okay. You have my blessing. In India, you see this a lot. Somebody does this. And then sometimes you'll see her with a pot, water pot, no, pot of Amrit, nectar. Amrit means, what's the other word for it?
Holy water.
Yeah, no, it's more than holy water. Soma. Soma. Nectar of the gods. It gives eternal life. Amrit. Amrita. No death. Okay, Amrit. And then sometimes you see depictions of her, I think in the one we sent around.
Gold coins.
Hmm? With the coins.
Gold coins.
Yeah, with the gold coins. So, and then she's often depicted with flanked by two elephants on either side. And the elephants have drawn up the water of the pond. She stands on the lotus. She holds sometimes two lotuses. She is the goddess of the lotus. One of her names is Padma. Yeah. She holds the lotus. And the lotus is a symbol for transcendence, no? The lotus is the spiritual symbol because the lotus is born from the mud under the water. What's dirtier than mud in that sense? And it grows the stem up. When the stem reaches the top of the water, it puts down what? The lily pad, the leaves on top of the water. And then the stem goes up a little further, and then the flower appears. So the flower is the essence of the lotus. It's like the soul, untouched by matter. The flower untouched by water, by mud. So that's the symbol for spirituality, the lotus. So sometimes she's with the two elephants, and they're drawing the water up, and they are squirting the water, showering the water over her head. And that's the Abhishek ceremony, where you purify the deity, you cleanse the deity with panchamrit, water and ghee and yogurt and sugar and honey. It's very commonly done, especially in the south of India. It's very common, Abhishek. So the elephant is one of her major symbols as well. And elephants back in the day constituted or represented authority, kingdom, sovereignty, correct? Who could afford to keep elephants? Only the king. Too expensive, ate too much. And they build a little, what do you call the thing on top? Howdah? What is that called? The little...
Howdah.
Howdah, yeah. And then the mahout is the guy, elephant driver. And the king would sit in the howdah, or whomever, big personality, like this. So elephants are always connected to Lakshmi. And elephants also represent fertilizing rains and suggest royal authority, which I said. Kalindi here, that's she sitting there, once she was asking Lakshmi for a favor. Whatever you want materially speaking, Lakshmi is also a goddess that is often importuned or asked for her favor. And Kalindi asked for something or other. And then, but more importantly, in this instance, she asked for a sign. Would you give me a sign that you heard my prayer? I'm sure you've done that before when you made prayers, no? You said, please now give me a sign that you heard me. You're working on it. right? You got somebody on it for me, right? That's what you want to know. Come on, you said it once or twice. So Clint says, give me a sign. So we're living up in the Dublin Mountains in Stepaside. Yeah? You know where that is. So she's driving down from our house, which is on the side of the mountain, overlooking the Irish Sea. And of course, all of a sudden, walking alongside the road are two elephants. As you would see in Dublin, Ireland, right? Common occurrence. Not. With two mahouts, one on top of each elephant. You know, exercising the elephants alongside the Belly Edmund Duff Road. It's a fact. So there was her sign. And as a side note, to explain it to you, the circus had come to town and the elephants were getting a bit of a workout up the mountain, I guess. So, there you go. I was going to say this. Skip that. Not enough time. 10 qualities in particular are attributed to Lakshmi. Food. Your pantry in your house where the food is, your fridge, should be what? Empty, moderately empty, or full? Full. Always full. It's prosperity. It's abundance. Lakshmi only stays with God, with Vishnu. What English word do we get from Lakshmi? In Bengal, they don't say Lakshmi, they say Loki. Lucky. Lady Luck. Lady Good Fortune. That's her. That's her. No, I'm not pointing to her. I'm pointing to Lakshmi. Well, she's the same. She'd be the same. So, left side of the body, masculine or feminine? Feminine. Right side of the body, masculine. We all know this, right? Brain, same? No. Brain's different. Why? Because left side of the brain controls the right side of the body. Right side of the brain controls the left side of the body. Correct? Switches hemispheres. That's a fact. Well, the doctors here will tell you. They know. And so when we say left brain, we mean rational, logical, intellectual. When we say right brain, we mean creative, intuitive, artistic. Right? But left side is feminine, right side is masculine. So when you are in bed with your wife, your husband, your love, a woman lies on what side? She's on the left side, he's on the right. Why? Because when he turns on his side to face her, he represses his feminine energy by lying on his left side, and vice versa. She represses her masculine energy by lying on her right side. He lies on his left side, she lies on her right side. So she diminishes her masculine energy in front of her man. The embodiment of the male energy. And same. That's how it works. Whenever you see a depiction of the goddess, not here. This is the swing. Yeah. But there's a picture there of Radha Krishna on the wall. But the goddess is always portrayed in any kind of formal painting or deity form on the left. Because she's...
Same thing we follow when we do some spiritual worship and we do yoga,
puja.
The lady should be set on the left side.
Always.
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 If we do the ceremony of the Indian like Indian marriage, that's also the left side.
Yes.
Always.
Always.
Heart is there in the left side, right?
So, yeah. Now, if there's a little conflict going in there in the old marriage, what side of the bed are we on here? Better think twice. Maybe shift sides. Tame things down a bit, you know? Okay. These 10 things are attributed to Lakshmi: food, royal power, sovereignty. You want something that these are now in material sphere. If you really want these things, we don't promote them here. We promote going back to Godhead, getting out of here, and developing a relationship with Krishna. That's what we promote. I'm just sort of covering the bases for you, so you know everybody fits in. Nobility, power of achievement. She can help you achieve. Holy luster, divine aura, effulgence, charisma, magnetism. You see some of these people that are, on TV or people like that who are entertainers, or you meet them. You don't have to be an entertainer. You meet them and they just have this charisma. Have this energy coming off of them, and it's very attractive. It's just, it draws people to them. Right? Kingdom, good fortune, wealth and abundance, and beauty. Okay, Radha, the fourth and final goddess. Radha is connected to Krishna. Radha is the divine feminine in its highest manifestation. So when Krishna, being God, wanted to know what it was like to be with God, he was stuck in a subjective position. Well, if I'm God, I'm in my own body. I don't really actually know what it's like to hang around me. And you don't know what it's like to be with you. How do you know? The people around you will tell you how much they love you, or how wonderful you are, how much they love to be with you, or you make them laugh, or you take away their cares, their sorrow. That's how you know. When somebody keeps telling you, I love you, you know, I just really love you. Did I tell you I love you? I do. Like that. So he manifested himself as the divine feminine so he could see what it would be like to experience being with Krishna. I know it's kind of hard to wrap your mind around, but on the other hand, it's kind of logical. Yeah. If you could do that, you might try it yourself. And he wanted to be in a more intimate, loving reciprocation. Why? Because what's the thing that we're all looking for down here in the material world?
Love.
Love. Intimate, loving reciprocation. Isn't this what we're all looking for? With just our male partner, our female partner, our marital partner? Yes, we can say a lot of times primarily, but no. With everybody, with our children, with everybody. If we can get it, we can do it, right? So, there's a verse from the Bhagavatam. Anaya radito nunam Bhagavan Harir Ishvaraha Yanno Vihaya Govinda Prito Yam Anayad Raha. So, here Radha is described by her Anaya Aradita. And the translation for this verse is, certainly this particular gopi is a cowherd maiden, Radha, has perfectly worshipped the all-powerful personality of Godhead Govinda, or Krishna, since he is so pleased with her that she has become his favorite. Perfect worship. How would you worship or please, if that's too strong a word for us, how would you please a person whom you claim to love? By loving them in a what manner? In an unconditional manner. Right? No matter what. Is it easy to find unconditional love in the material world? It's not so easy. I only first experienced it when my first child came around. And I began to get feelings of unconditional love for the baby that I never really had before. And then he grew up and his ego developed and that went away. You know what I mean. No, I am a loving guy. But, right? It's not easy. But that's what we're looking for. God is not made in our image. We're made in God's image. He's looking for the same thing. Thus, Radha. It's a beautiful, loving, unconditional reciprocation. And it gets better and better and more intense. And it expands over time. I don't know what that means. I can't say that I've experienced it. But that's the difference between ours. I don't say we don't love our partner deeply, more deeply over time. Oftentimes we do. But we still ride the material waves, do we not? So, Radha is the perfect worshiper, topmost worshiper, Radha Rani, the queen of all worshippers, the queen of all worship. This is on the pure spiritual plane. This has nothing to do with matter down here. Would you pray to Radha for material benefits? Well, theoretically, I suppose you could, but you're not encouraged to do so at all. Because, you know, you're then praying to a goddess here for something down here on this lower level, you see. Radha's love for Krishna is unconditional. She's willing to sacrifice everything for him. Krishna finds this to be irresistible. Is that surprising? No. Wouldn't you find it irresistible? Somebody would sacrifice absolutely everything for you. In a healthy manner. Yeah, he would. Krishna's the same. Even in a mundane relationship, to be loved by your partner unconditionally is a dream we all share. But what would that be like if we ourselves as individuals were in an unconditional loving reciprocation with God Himself? Can you imagine that? That's what we're trying to achieve here. That's what we hope you will go, oh gee, I'll put me down for that. Yeah. Radha and Krishna are never more than 14 to 16 years old, no matter how old they are. Well, when you're eternal, you don't age. It's no aging. So they stay ever youthful, ever young, ever beautiful, ever childlike. And their relationship can be best summed up like a game of hide and seek. No, it can't. Yes, it can. Why? Why a simple game of hide? They're kids, they're running around in the forest. They're having fun, they're singing, they dance, they play, look after the calves, swim in the Yamuna River. No, that's not the spiritual world. Oh yeah, it is. That's part of it, if you want to go there. Put my name down for that. I like that. I've never grown up anyway, so sounds good to me. So hide and seek, in other words, one never wishes to leave one's most beloved. But one will voluntarily do so, like in a game of hide and seek. So that you can have the fun of finding your beloved who's ostensibly hiding from you, but who wants one thing more than anything else for you too. To find him! Oh, you got me! But you know he's behind his tree. I saw a little bit of your cloth sticking out. So there, I knew you were there. No, I just had a feeling you were there, and I was right. So simple, so pure. That's Radha Krishna. That's where we want to go. Okay, this is what Krishna said to Radha. said, when I am without you by my side, people call me Krishna. Krishna means all attractive. All attractive. Irresistible. They call him Krishna when he's alone. But when you are standing by my side, people call me Sri Krishna or beautiful Krishna. Because you are here with me. The title Sri is often used among the gods, but in India also. And it's a title of great respect. And it's a wonderful thing to be called that by anybody. It's just the highest form. It's not just respectful like Mr. It's way more than that. Because Sri means the goddess, the divine energy. So then they call me Sri Krishna. Ooh, I like it. He thinks. When I choose to become the seed that begets everything, then by your mystic powers you become the most beautiful of all women. Why? Because he's the energetic principle and the feminine is the energy. And they come together and they create whatever it is they create. Well, we think they create diversity in the world, or they create all the beings in the world. We create babies, we do it. But we create all kinds of stuff. Not just babies. Any creative thing you do. Anything. Right? Then he says, you are half my body. You are the supreme goddess, the root of all nature. In power, intelligence, knowledge, and glory, you are my equal. So does he lord it over her? I'm going to tell her what to do. I'm going to put her in her place. No. You talk like that when you claim to love somebody? No. You make fun of her? No. You criticize her? No. You criticize her behind her back? No. No, you don't. Ever. Ever. Krishna says, I am fire. You are the luster of my fire. And without you, I have no power to burn. I can't even burn. He goes on and on. But I won't. Let me end it here. So, it's not just about the divine feminine, it's the divine feminine and the divine masculine coming together in a perfect balance and symbiosis, mutual exchange. That's what we're trying to learn here. That's what's embodied by Radha and Krishna. And we want you not only to appreciate Radha and Krishna, we want you to enter into your own relationship with them. Into a loving reciprocal relationship with. That's what we do here. That's the whole concept. And as wonderful as all the rest of the goddesses were that we talked about, and they are wonderful, this is a whole other level. You see. And if you can express that same energy down here on planet Earth, great. You know? So Krishna says, it says here, this is Madhya Lila, Chaitanya Charitamrita. When the gopis were overwhelmed with dissatisfaction due to Krishna's absence from the Rasa Lila, from the Rasa dance in the forest on the full moon night, Krishna returned to them and told them, my dear gopis, our meeting is certainly free from all material contamination. There's nothing about it that is mundane. I must admit that in many lifetimes it would be impossible for me to repay my debt to you because you have cut off the bondage of family life just to search for me and to be with me. You've cut off all connection to family life and your whole identity and your purpose in the physical world to seek me out. lifetime after lifetime, he says. Consequently, I am unable to ever repay you. This is God speaking to his devotees. I cannot repay you, no matter how hard I try, because of this love and devotion you have given me. Therefore, please be satisfied with your honest activities in this regard. How do you capture God?
Like that.
He can't resist. And you got him. And when you got him, he won't let you go. He won't let you go. Then you'll be happy. Up until then? Okay. Jai Radhe, Jai Sri Devi Ji. Okay, I know I rambled on there for a while. Any questions? No, I covered all the points. Absolutely. Must be. I barely touched these notes. So I'll be here, I think it's the 26th of October, and I'm going to speak about Prabhupada. Because on the following day, according to the lunar calendar, that was his disappearance day. When he died in November, it was November back then, but 77. I wasn't in India, I was in Los Angeles working at the press, helping to translate his books. I was a Sanskrit editor. In fact, I ran the Sanskrit department at that time. So it was a very big blow. He's gone.
Let me ask him how he passed.
He was ill for quite some time, and all the muscle left his body. He was just, but his consciousness, and the doctor said that the nerve would have been grating upon the bone, and the pain would have been excruciating. He would take no pain medicine. He was offered. He used to have a pharmacist. He knows all about that stuff. No, he wouldn't take any. But his mind was sharp. Right up until he left. Absolutely sharp. So we're going to talk about Sri Gurudev in October. Thank you so much for your kind attention. It's much appreciated. And I think, are you doing a bit of chanting, boys? And then the feast will magically appear. We can sing, chant, dance, and eat our way back to Godhead. Hare Krishna.